You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry here with Faraj today. We've got a challenge here on The Takeaway. All week long, we've been listening to the Sotomayor hearings, Sonia Sotomayor, for the Senate Judiciary Committee, trying to be confirmed as a justice, an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And there have been headlines and there have been sound bites, but we wanted to step back. And joining us now is Nate Persily, friend of The Takeaway, professor of law and political science at Columbia University, who we often rely on when we have pointy-headed questions about what's going on in law and the judiciary. First of all, Nate, good morning.
Good morning.
And, you know, help us out here. Is there anything in the Constitution that says that you have to have hearings like this that we have here in the 21st century where she's in the center, all the senators around, millions of cameras, the whole world is watching, that sort of thing?
No, you don't have to have hearings. The Senate has to vote on her confirmation, and by majority vote, they will either, you know, confirm or reject her.
So advice and consent could just be a voice vote.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, the voices are of senators asking questions. And the debate appears to have boiled down, at least in the big headlines, and I want to talk about that first, to this exchange right here.
Do you agree with him that the law only takes you the first 25 miles of the marathon and that that last mile has to be decided by what's in the judge's heart?
No, sir. I wouldn't approach the issue of judging in the way the president does. He has to explain what he meant by judging. I can only explain what I think judges should do, which is judges can't rely on what's in their heart. They don't determine the law. Congress makes the laws. The job of a judge is to apply the law.
Of course, that exchange from July 14th this week, Sonia Sotomayor and Senator John Kyle talking about judges and empathy. Now, Nate Persily, you're a professor at Columbia University, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, you know, a resident here of planet Earth. But it seems to me the idea that you don't ever look into your heart when you're a judge dealing with broad issues of law and justice is just absurd on its face. His question is absurd. Her answer is absurd. The whole thing is absurd. Am I nuts?
No, that's right. But it's also reflective of what these hearings have been about, which is that she is trying to run away from all of these statements that say, well, a judge's background is going to affect her or another judge's decisions. She's also running away from the empathy trope, which President Obama has brought out even before her nomination. And so she has been steadfastly trying to say, oh, the only thing that matters is the law and how I interpret it, and that there's some kind of objective truth out there that I'm discovering. It's not something about something in me to discover.
But isn't it the case that if a judge somewhere at some point didn't look into his or her heart, there'd still be lynching in the United States, or we'd still have segregated schools in the United States? I mean, at some point, didn't somebody have to, like, leave the logic zone and go into some sort of humanistic zone to advance the law?
Well, I think that that's happened actually since the beginning. I mean, it's not as if the words in the Constitution are so clear that they're going to decide cases. But the funny thing is, Sotomayor feels particularly compelled to make this argument. If you look at Justice Alito in his hearings, for example, he reflected on his background. He talked about his experience, his family's experience,
right,
as Italian immigrants,
right,
and he was allowed to say those things because no one was going to make the charge that he was somehow going to be biased in favor of Italians who came before the court.
Right, right,
but because
right.
of her Berkeley speech and these other quotes that have come up, she has to run away from this idea that the judge's background is going to determine outcomes.
Right. Once upon a time, when Justice Bork was in these similar hearings and didn't make it to the Supreme Court, as we know, it was a robust, vigorous, intellectually adventurous discussion of the law. Of course, it nailed him for the rest of his career. But that was the last time we've had a real discussion of the law and the judiciary in these kinds of hearings. Yes?
That's right. And I think since Bork, there's a playbook that nominees have to follow, which is that they have to reveal as little as possible and to pretend that they are completely open and haven't decided a lot of these controversial issues that everyone is interested in.
And if running away from an intellectual discussion of the law was sort of the lesson of the Bork hearings, you really hit a low point by the time you get to hear this moment in the Clarence Thomas hearings.
At no time did I ever indicate that I ever asked her out. I categorically denied that I ever asked her on a date.
That's why I asked you the question, Judge, to make sure it's on the record what you said. I thought that's what you had said, but it's been sitting out there.
One of those guys is vice president. The other one is a Supreme Court justice. My, how history changes from the 1980s. So since those two, Bork and Thomas, we've got this sort of kabuki theater thing.
Well, they also sort of exemplify the different bounds of these confirmation hearings. On the one hand, you know that the judge is not going to reflect anything about his or her ideology. And so therefore, you try to get something in their background, whether it's these comments that Sotomayor made in her speeches, whether it's clubs that they had been members of at some other point in their life. And so you go after those things, which are more likely to bury a nominee than sort of.
But the irony is, of course, they're all about the heart. You know, it's like if you're a member of a club, that's the heart part of your life, okay? If you're doing the law, you're doing the law. I mean, to ask about those personal details, it seems to me, is another contradiction. But finally, in listening to the hearings, there's been a lot of discussion of some really boring stuff, but it's been fascinating to me. Property law has come up, the Grassley conversation, even a discussion of corporate litigation, her discussion yesterday about the reason why we have gobbledygook in contract law. All fascinating stuff.
Well, I think the way to keep one's sanity in watching these hearings is principally to look at them as markers along our sort of path of constitutional development. You look at the issues like property takings, gun rights. There was even some reference Charles Grassley made to gay marriage.
Senator from Iowa. Yeah.
That these are types of issues that 30 years ago we wouldn't have been spending so much time in a confirmation hearing on. And so you shouldn't tear out one's hair trying to figure out, you know, the machinations of these hearings. But if you look at them as just a story in constitutional development, they're kind of interesting.
What's the takeaway from these hearings?
Well, I think that it is a historic appointment,
right.
And all of this preoccupation with the wise Latina comment, her and judicial background, is, I think, in retrospect, say 30 years from now, we're going to be saying, right. "Wow, this was an example of our path onto a society where there's not going to be one racial group as a majority. It represents our diversity as a country."
Well, I've looked into my heart. Nate Persily, professor of law and political science at Columbia, and decided to invite you back.
Well,
maybe when these hearings are
over.
Thank you, Nate.